Welcome to Star for the Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I'm an SWB Online, Fed Common Line, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us for a talk cast every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either call on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. The call ID is 17772. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.talkshow.com and search for call ID 17702. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to follow me on Twitter, my Twitter account there is sfuoncall. Shocker. And, of course, I have a personal account called Paul Franz. So find me on Twitter on using my personal account. Just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. It's PaulFranz. And, of course, I have my other business account called Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, the lovely talk cast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. Steve was busy working on the same old as last week. Call to Arms, you know, Starfleet Book 2.0, also the Captain's Log number 54. Steve Petrick, of course, busily working on SWB updates in the Tholian Master Starship book. And Gene, of course, since they've released GURPS Prime Directive, at least the electronic version, last week, the one thing that she was busy working on is fixing the issues that she missed, because even Gina is not perfect. So in some cases, the one that she posted on Facebook that was kind of a consistent one, which was she's off by 10 pages. When it comes to referencing a page, she was off by 10 pages. So, you know, she kicked herself for that. But, you know, as I said, hey, we're all human. We all make mistakes. Gene's same thing. You know, Gene, don't worry about it. We all make mistakes. You're okay. You're okay. Moving on to the SWB Online Tournament, the Sapphire Star Tournament number one. Semifinals, finally, Lee Graves defeated Bill Scheller, in the who was flying the Klingon. Lee Graves was flying the ISC. The final between Peter Bakia and Lee Graves, that's the Gorn versus the ISC, started on Monday night around 9 o'clock. Unfortunately, I was unable to attend, but it looks that they started with a plasma ballet to start off with ISC firing his PPD at relatively long range, 4 pulses, and then launching is an enveloper plasma G. The Gorn then also, in response, launched a S enveloping torpedo. And of course, both of them, what did they do? They turned off. So that makes it a plasma ballet. With that, you know, they ended turn number two near the center of the map at range 9. The game is scheduled to continue on Friday night. So if you're around, I would hope that they start at the same time, 9 o'clock Eastern time. So if you want to, you can sign in and watch the game. Moving onward to the library. Unfortunately, the only things that have been worked on for the past week, Frank worked on corrections to the Gorns, which he did many corrections, and many of those corrections have been updated. And they're now a part of the library. Now, of course, that leaves the completed conversions at 2,519, but yet to be converted at 811. The percent complete is at 75.65%. So that's a nice percentage, but of course, we'd like to get it closer to 100. And with that is the news for this week. Me, it's the only Paul Franz welcoming you to SFU On Call. And tonight we've got, well, me. And we've also in the wonderful chat room, we've got Drew. We have guest Dave. Long story on that one. And I'm also, of course, live streaming on Twitch. So if anybody wants to be there, that's fine. I'm also keeping an eye on the chat room there. And if you want to, you can chat with me over on that. That would be Fine. Because I will keep an eye on you, and I will be happy to reply to anything on the Twitch chat room also. But tonight, so one thing we're going to do tonight is I figure we would go through the Merchants of Federation, the playtest. Unfortunately, I was unable to get the camera all set up. Dummy me, I didn't think about getting the thing all charged before the day before. So it wasn't charged. And I didn't have a big enough cord to run it to the, yeah. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to record it, which actually I think at this point, it was a good thing, at least for me, because I would have been really, to say it at least, it was embarrassing, is to put it mildly. Let's back up here. And that is, I don't think it was a complete and utter disaster. Because fortunately for me, I think for me, there wasn't a complete disaster because of, actually, I feel like we got some good responses, good questions about the game. I wrote many notes about it. I actually posted to Jay. I posted both some in the Board Game Geek, some on the discussion board. And to say the very least, it was interesting. A couple of things I want to go over when it comes to playtests are some of the things that some lessons I learned about the playtest and what not to do. Some things that definitely what not to do. A lot of those are learned, lessons learned. I'll go through what I learned about the game itself too, but I first want to go through the play test itself. One thing actually I realized after last week, just to let you know, since actually Jay was on the chat feed, what I'm hoping to do is I got his email address. So what I have been conversing a little bit back and forth with him just for the plain simple reason because of I sent him an email address just to make sure that he knew something was there on the forum, on the discussion board, and on that discussion board so that he knew that he had needed to be responding. Unfortunately, it was the Labor Day weekend, so he took the vacation. So he was on the road. He was not available to post things, which is like, dude, that's exactly the wrong time. I need you. I need tech support here. Some of my difficulties were related to me. Some of them were related to the game designer. Maybe not the game designer, but the way things got set up. Okay. Number one is that number one thing that I found out that I did wrong. You definitely have to go through the rules and play it yourself before you try to teach it to others. I thought I could get away with not doing that. Because I started it and then I stopped and I realized, okay, I'm missing a little bit. I'm not missing. I forgot to print out certain things. Certain things I really needed to get on the table. And that's one of the reasons why the play test initially got delayed is because I sat there and I had these little itty bitty hex, not even really counters per se, chits, I don't know what you want to call them. But basically, they're actually what, I'm not quite sure if that was going to be used. Definitely it's going to be a two-faced piece because of, on one side it's supposed to be blank or maybe it's a consistent image. And then on the other side is different resource that could be. Now, some of those resources could be, one of the possible resources is no resource, because of the whole idea is that you take those, you scramble them up, and then you put them face down on the board. And then one thing is that you go to that system, because each system has five resources. And then what you do is you survey that the resources, and that will pay you 10 credits. And that's all good and dandy. Though, so I got burned by that. Now, that caused a delay and everything. And unfortunately, I tried to do everything. I started 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks before I was actually going to play test. It's just that I didn't focus on this and getting it all set up like the week before. So that on the week of, the direct week before, I could actually sit and play the game. Of course, I have cats, so not exactly the most conducive environment. But I could at the very least go through it and then find out what one thing that was found out actually much earlier than I even knew, which was there are these cards. And these cards are for each, what's called an installation. And on those cards shows how much income those installations produce. Also, how much of a resource those installations produce. I did not know that these were missing. So, it makes things very interesting. When I went to play, and unfortunately, actually kind of fortunately, we never got to that phase. Why did we never get to that phase? It's because I misunderstood the rules. Now, that is a failing on me. I didn't understand the rules because of it's just the way I work, and I didn't realize the way I did not really heed what I've learned about myself and learned about how I learn things. And how I learn things is give me a nice hard copy book. Like reading electronically, it doesn't sink in that well. That's why I need it to be a hard copy book. So I printed out it. I got a nice binder and I put the rule book in the binder, but I didn't actually read it from the binder. And so, and of course I was also reading it. I was trying to read the rules when I was bowling. So to say the very least, my concentration wasn't that well. I read through the rules, but I didn't truly understand them and really comprehend what they meant. Now, some of the rules, in my mind, are confusing. It's all get out. And what I might be doing probably this weekend is I might at least write up or type up one of those two. What I'm going to do is I'm going to write up or type up what I call a cheat sheet. Because of one of the things that I think actually would be nice to have as a card or a little sheet, which is a cheat sheet for the actions. Because each ship can do certain actions. And unfortunately, their actions are only listed in the rule book. That makes it really difficult when you want to figure out what are the actions that you can do. And one of the actions that I found, which I didn't understand until I actually was talking to someone who played, a guy named Nick Blank. Hi, Nick. Nick and I, back in the day, we actually were judges back when SFB tournaments were run at Origins. So that was interesting. I love doing that kind of stuff at Origins. That was one of my favorite things to do. After I got my rated ace card at Origins, And but and after that, after I got my Rated Ace card, at that point, what I did was I said, okay, I got my. Now what I'm going to do is I'm just going to judge. So for the rest of the number of years, I actually went to Origins. The next ADB went to Origins. What I did was I was a judge. So Nick and me did that. But anyway, and that is docking. Okay. Docking is an action, but it's not really an action. You don't really dock your ship. Which is one thing that he explained to me. It's like docking. You don't really dock your ship per se. It's not like you're docked or undocked. You dock and then you do your loading and unloading and that's a single action. When it comes to resource, you can load and unload actions. Load and unload resources as part of the docking action itself. So that's one thing I needed to learn. And that's another thing this is the first time that I've ever played a new game, without someone that I know teaching me how to play the game. Because when someone teaches you how to play the game, then you can look at the rule book and you can go, oh yeah, here's what that says that, here's that what says that. Now, so that action is one of the more confusing ones. Now, there were some little things that as a playtest group we found were things that I'm right now a minor bit frustrated with Jay, and that is caused by I asked him an explicit question in the discussion board. And I basically the question was simple. What happens if maintenance comes around for your ship outside of turn one? Because I already asked explicitly about turn one, because turn one, he said that, okay, you start with no credits whatsoever to your name. But according to the sequence of play, says before you actually do any actions, anything that actually can earn you credits, you need to pay for your maintenance fee for those ships that you have. Well, if you have to pay for your maintenance fee and you have no money, what do you do? Well, Jay said, oh yeah, well the first turn, just skip it. You know, it's fine. You know, no one pays anything for the first turn. It's a free turn. Okay. That's fine. You know, you can do that. And I think that is fine. But then I explicitly ask him, okay, what happens if you pay for your maintenance cost? You don't have money to pay for your maintenance cost. And when I explicitly asked that question, Jay did not answer. He didn't even say, I don't know. Let me think up something. This is where it comes down to, as I explained it, actually, I gave a suggestion in the Board Game Geek forum on that same topic. And basically one I suggested was, okay, why don't we do this? If you don't have enough money to pay for maintenance cost, the number of action points for that ship, because in theory you could have multiple ships, you could pay maintenance costs for ship number one and two, and after that you have no money, in which case you can't even have an inactive ship, an inactive ship costs at least one credit. So, you know, and then if you can, inactive ship, it means no action points whatsoever, so you might as well not pay maintenance at all in this case. But the original idea was that, okay, if you don't have enough for maintenance cost, the number of action points is halved. That's fine. Now, I didn't think about, okay, if you to pay for maintenance costs for individual ships or you pay maintenance costs for your whole fleet, you know, what happens? I think it's, but anyhow, I thought, you know, okay, that's an idea of actually what to do, which is you just say, okay, half your, you only get half your action points then. So that you can actually still do something, because what happens if you say that, okay, if you have no, if you can't pay for maintenance fee, your ship can't move, i.e. you have no action points, then, you know, that's crazy. You know, the whole idea of having so it only has half the action points, that's okay, because, okay, then what happens is, okay, you're not upkeeping your ship, you're not paying the maintenance cost, you know, whether that means fixing, you know, the line, and, you know, the fuel line, you know, you have... you're fine. You got it kind of repaired. It leaks a little bit, but it's okay. You know, you might not can't go as fast, but you can still move. That kind of idea with not being able to pay the full maintenance cost, but you know, so that you can still get around. You still can do something to earn money, because you can't do any action points. You can't earn any money. And the only way to earn money is to actually use action points. Whether that is just doing a survey. Or is actually, moving the ship to take colonists like from the Federation starbase and moving them to a Klingon system. So, yeah, that's fine. Now, because the thing is, that's one thing that I'm not, yeah. I was going to say, it's because of my misunderstanding of the rules that the player did this, but I'm not sure that is true, though. My misunderstanding of the rules basically is that you have to... Well, my misunderstanding was that, okay, you can go survey, but then you have to dock in that system to pick up, and then you pick up the resources. I mean... I thought the resource deposits were resources, and then basically just pick those up, and then you get a resource. No, that's not the way it works. So I misunderstood that. That caused an issue. But even if I would understood that, I'm not sure if Eric, that was one of the guys who was playtesting, wouldn't have done what he did, which is basically he got a contract card that actually said, okay, take a colonist and deliver it to a Klingon. Klingon territory, you know, put a colonist there, which is, you know, it is kind of crazy, but okay, because that's one way of earning money is that you fulfill a contract. Now, and Lord knows, if you, in that case, you deliver a colonist to the Klingon territory. The Klingon territory at that point for that first colonist is 15 credits. Well, if he does that, he gets 30 credits. That's a lot of credits for what? Two turns of actions? Now, obviously, when it comes to amount of money that you can possibly earn, it's better to go and survey, go into a system and then do a survey, you know, use all your action points to earn at the very least 10 credits for each survey that you do. And that, because you get 10 credits on a survey, whether you actually find anything or not, it doesn't matter. The Federation pays you 10 credits. But the thing is that, because of what Eric did, what Eric did was that he starts with 0 credits. The free trader that you get at the start of the game, it only gives you 2 action points. 2 action points means that you can go through 2 systems. So 1, 2. And to get to a Klingon system costs you 4. It's four systems away from the Federation starbase. So, okay, fine. So it takes him 2 turns to get there. So he can't actually deliver the colonists for 3 turns. Oh, sorry, not 3 turns. it's actually two turns because of you have two opportunity phases, and then you have you use your action points for those in those two opportunity phases. Now, that's one thing I did not check, which just came to my mind, which is whether the action points are for a single turn or for, or my understanding is that they're for a single action phase. And I have to double check, but I'm pretty sure that is the case. I'm not sure if it's explicitly stated in the rulebook, but that's what I got. And that's one thing that we found was like in the case of freighters. Freighters, basically, they cannot visit any system that is not fully explored. Now, the question is, what is the definition of a visited system? Because it's not defined in the rulebook. And visit is not actually mentioned anywhere except for in the description of the special the limitations of the abilities of a freighter. That's the one thing that is not stated. It's only said, oh, if you visit a system, well, that's the only time the word visit is used in the whole rulebook. Because let me bring it up real quick. Which is, where is it? Okay, that's about that. That was another thing that was not clear. But Okay. It says a ship may use one action point to move from one system to the next. Now, it doesn't say that you're visiting that system. It's saying you're moving from one system to the next. Now, in theory, as was pointed out by my friendly, the players, is that you can go to a system and you can not really, you don't have to visit it at that point. You don't have to go through the system. You can go around the system. So in that case, if you go around the system, are you actually visiting the system? And I looked at that rule and went, I bet you what Jay meant was that going to the next system is actually visiting that system. So, I think that was the ruling. That was the ruling for the game. I could have sworn what I did is I reversed myself and went, it doesn't say visit, and that is the possibility that you actually are not visiting the system. It's just a way to it. In my mind, is when you end movement, that's when you visit the system. But I actually asked Jay about it, and Jay said no. Moving to a system is a visit to that system. So it's like, okay, fine, no problem. So that came up. Now, the one thing that was not also in the thing that I just found out, I didn't think about it until I saw this, which is, okay, we had four players, so we had this one, which were not being used. Now, one thing that was not clear on this was that because it was not clear about these non-used spaces, it wasn't clear if basically they're off limits. Now, I don't think in our short game, because we had a really short game, I don't think anyone actually moved to these hexes. They might have. I don't know if anyone did, because I think most people went from here. No one actually visited these systems. So if it says not used, are they then off limits for movement? Because my initial assumption was that not used just means, okay, those systems don't get any resources. So you take all these resources and then you place them in these active systems, except for obviously this one and this one, because this one is the Federation Starbase. This one is the Klingon Starbase. So we've placed them all down in those systems. But, you know, it says not used. Okay, not used. But does that mean that's off limits? You know, my assumption was that it just meant that it's not, doesn't have any resources. So my guess is that what he meant is that those are not used or off limits. You can't actually visit those systems. Because that was one of the questions I came up with, which is, okay, when you have a system with no resources, because these systems that I marked not used don't have any resources, can a freighter move to those systems? Because of that was one of the things about the freighter, is that small freighter, any kind of freighter, you cannot move to that system. You can't visit that system unless it is has no unexplored planets. So, and my guess is that what really meant was that these are not used. Hexes cannot be visited. They're considered not. They're not even part of the board. Basically, my guess is that that's what he meant, but what was not explicitly stated in that. Actually, one of those things that drove me crazy early on when it comes to the rules was, where is it? Oh, no, this is about building the facilities. It was docking actions. Actually, there's two things about the docking that drove me crazy. Let me show it, which is here. Okay, this says, okay, it's a dock. Okay, stop, me, dock, bump. And then underneath the dock, you got pick up resources and delivery resource cubes. I did not really notice that, this is a sub rule of this rule. I really did not even think about that. So, given that, I assumed that basically this was one action and this was another action. Not that you dock and then you can pick up or deliver resources. So that was one of the minor things that drove, that was confusing to me. Wasn't until later on when I was actually talking to Nick that I realized the way he was talking about docking is that docking isn't docking. Docking allows you to do either pick up or deliver things within that action. So, as I said, docking is, as Nick said, docking is not docking. The one thing that drove me crazy is this one right here, which is that when it comes to pickup, it says, please note a starship can pick up as many colonist cubes as it can carry with a dock action at a starbase. But delivering is down here established, which is a little different. But I'm a rules person from Starfleet Battles. Big surprise. And that is this reference. I was looking in this section, for the pickup colonists. I was looking for it to say that a starship can pick up as many colonists as it wants. But it wasn't until actually I read through it both sections again that I actually realized that, oh, wait a minute, there's where it notes it, because I thought I had read it someplace, but I could not find where in the rule book it actually stated it. Until I reread it and went, oh, there it is. It's hidden in the delivery portion where it talks about the pickup. You know, does that make sense to anybody? Maybe I'm blind. So that was one of the things that got a little bit confusing. Now, we got the game going on pretty well, through the Foley Boys and the incorrect understanding of the rules. We got to a point. Now, after I realized that I completely and utterly screwed up, we were on a break. So one thing that I did was Eric, who is actually, he is a very much experienced playtester and gamer. So I went, okay, Eric, I think I screwed up. And then I explained to him what I found in the rules. Because I finally understood this stuff. I finally understood facilities to a certain degree. And this is when I realized that, oh, wait a minute. There's a card here. And guess what? We don't have those cards. So I mentioned that, more to the point for him is that I think I finally understood facilities. And even when I explained to him, I misunderstood the facilities because I didn't realize about this part. The amount of money, because that's not actually stated in all of this. It never mentions once that you actually have to pay for that facility. That it's not just, oh, you need the colonist. Oh, not just you need the resource deposit right here. Oh, and also, of course, the appropriate Federation card, which has basically, okay, a processor in this case, and it's for a certain resource, a processor for a green resource, whatever green resource is at this point. I think it's bio something. But it doesn't say anywhere in here that, oh, see this here? That's the cost of of building that processor. Because this lets you know this does not match what the card was. Let me show you. Okay, these are those are the event cards. Here they are. This is what they look like. Facility 10, extractor, boom. So that means that needs 10 credits. Now, there's nothing in here that mentions that it's 10 credits, that it actually cost. And it wasn't, unless you actually read the example, that it mentions cost. It says amount of money. It's like, amount of money? There's no place in the rule that states that there's amount of money that you have to pay. So that's one of the questions I asked to Jay. I said, Jay, is that number on the card? Is that actually the cost that you have to pay for building the facility? And he said, oh, yeah. And I went, dude, can you please put on the change on the card? Like, I asked him, can you add like cost? Just a little something that mentions that, oh, this is the cost of building the facility. And then there was another thing, which was a minor thing, which was that these colors on the cards don't match Let's look up here. Those are cool. That's nice money. What I actually did is I took this money, the black and white version, and what I did is I cut it out on pieces of, you know, I printed out on pieces of paper, not actually the card stock, but paper, because I figured I wanted it to feel like Monopoly money. I figured that probably is the best way to go. What's the thing about doing this? This gets a little expensive. So I was like, nope. And I printed these out on cardstock. So that worked well. Okay, but see, here's the colors of the different items. Precious metal is this orange color. You got nice bright green here. Nice light blue for fuel. And if you go down to these, I missed here. Well, here's a refinery. A refinery, I'm assuming, has to do with fuel. If you find a fuel resource, you know, fuel deposit, it's weird that sounds, you have a refinery. Well, the refinery is white. It's not the light blue, which is this, the fuel. So, or in this case, see, this is what actually you do. This, the resource deposit is these up here. But, you know, so that was one of those. That's a minor thing. Obviously, when they actually deliver the game, that's going to become critical. Because you need it to match the cards. Now, actually, there's one thing I was thinking about that Jay mentioned to me, which was because the way he plans on this to occur, to this work, is that these and the colonists are cubes. And then the ships, actually, you have ship bases, then you have the models, the miniatures that go on top of the ship bases, because you only can have, you have a maximum of three ships per player, one or corporation, however you want to put it. And then for those three ships, you know, there's the maximum five players, so you have a total of 15 possible ship bases. And that's another thing that I mentioned to Jay, is that was very confusing, because if you look at the rule mentions ship bases. Ship bases are fine. Ship bases make sense. When you have a physical base that you put your ship miniature on. But in the playtest, we have no ship miniatures. We have counters. These are our counters. Now, here's one thing that I'm thinking about, which is, I think that if they could have these mega hex counters on the hard cardboard, I think that would be better with these also being counters on hard cardboard, and obviously these are going to be hard counters on cardboard. I don't know how the heck you cut these out, but I'm assuming there's a way of cutting them out. And obviously the colonist cubes, I think you want to change those a little bit to have people on it, but I still think that, again, using counters is the best thing. And this is why I say that. And that is, it makes it easy, in my mind, to move the resources. Because of the ships, they're going to be carrying these resources or these colonists in their cargo hold. Now, I think it's probably, well, if you're using these counters, I don't think it makes sense to actually use cubes. Because if you use these counters, cubes don't make sense to a certain degree. Because in theory, you could probably put the cubes on here. And that actually probably could work fine as long as the cubes were small enough. But I like the maybe it's just because of I grew up with counters. But I think these would be best actual counters. But, you know, obviously the problem is for everybody else, I think, is that this is more designed for a Monopoly kind of crowd. A Monopoly kind of crowd in that they're used to having these big pieces like the Axis and Allies have these plastic pieces that you use. And I'm assuming that's how we would print it out. Now, the question is, how much would that cost? Like, each game is going to cost easily from $80 to maybe $100. I'm not sure how much it costs to actually create everything, including the board, because the board is gorgeous. There's only one minor problem is going to be with that board. And that is you're going to have to, it's going to be made out of cardboard, and it's going to be put into pieces. Because I printed it out as a 2 feet by 3 feet board, and it's beautiful. The graphics on it are absolutely gorgeous. They're wonderful. It's a wonderful board, and I've shown it to you in previous episodes for those who actually have watched the video. For those who haven't, you have to just believe me. Because of, unless you want to buy the playtest isn't expensive. It's, I think, $3. So either $3 or $4. I'm pretty sure it's $3 for the playtest kit. That's dirt cheap. And the board on it is beautiful. And I printed it out and I actually laminated it, and it looks great. The thing is, that board is going to change. So me getting it laminated, maybe not wasn't the best thing, but I think overall, it keeps it better. And if I want to play test it some more, I can do that. I spent quite a bit of money on the plate, on getting everything printed out and so forth. But anyhow, but one of the good things that we definitely did in the play test, and I'll get back to actually the goods and the bads. And that is one of the good things we did was actually all questions. Anytime a question came up, we wrote it down. Because if it wasn't easily obvious, then it needs to be explained. If it wasn't completely obvious when I read the rule, because a lot of times I would be going back and I'd be reading the rule book and go, okay, well, this book's this way. If it wasn't completely understandable, then we need to write it down. And every single question that I came up with, I wrote down. And I gave it off to Jay. And there was actually it was 6, somewhere between 6 and 8 questions and like 5 or 6 comments. For example, one of our comments for this was actually, let me show you real fast. That's this. See this? This is the only copy of this information. So one thing that I recommended was to have a cheat sheet. Basically, something that's a little thing that says, okay, Federation Trader, cost 10, sell 5, action points 2, cargo 1, specials, may survey. Of course, freight, same for here. The only thing is that kind of special, and that is may only visit fully explored systems. And same for, this one and this one. That'd be the special. And that just have a sheet for all four of these so that each player has a copy of how much each ship costs. and how much they can get for selling it. What's the standard sell price for the bank? Because if you actually look at the rules, the way the assumption, the pure assumption of the rules is that you'll go, everyone will get free traders, everyone will go and survey all the systems. That's the assumption. And one thing I pointed out to Jay was this. I pointed out to Jay, you cannot assume that everyone's going to follow your dictates. What might be the obvious choice to do might not be the choice that that player takes. Now, the question is, what is your game going to do? If it breaks the game, because that's basically what Eric did. Eric did something which was so totally out there. I mean, out in left field, with forgoing the grabbing of the money now and fulfilling the contract now and taking two turns, they basically took two turns to fulfill the contract instead of paying, instead of getting the cheap money quickly. He went for the long term, bigger bucks. Because in theory, okay, you got two action points for your free trader. Now, that means if you just move to the next system, okay, you can then survey one. And then the next turn, you can survey two. Well, if you do the same thing with the colonists to get to the Klingon, you basically can get 30 credits with a little less, with a little more work. But you know, so the problem is that, of course, that you aren't paying for maintenance. Neither turn one, which is allowed, or turn two, which again, which is what I print up with Jay. It's like, okay, well, what happens then? The goal of playtest is to have the gamers break your game, and they broke it. In my mind, Garrick broke it. Now, was it a bad break? No. But of course, always the question is at that point, what do you do? Because I'm not the game designer, so I have no clue how the individual systems interact. I can guess, but I didn't design the game, because therefore I didn't inherently have a feeling for how to resolve the issue. But as I said, I gave him a suggestion. Now, so that was a good thing we did. Obviously, we didn't get very far through, and we decided to kill the game early, which I apologize. And as it stood, okay, one of those things that happened, which was, in my mind, on the game designer's fault, and that is, there's two forms currently set up for this game. And unfortunately, Jay is not communicating back and forth. For example, on August 14th, that's 2 weeks before I did my playtest, someone on the 14th recognized on Board Game Geek, hey, you know that the facilities cards, they're not in the playtest. Which is kind of critical. So, because without it, you can't play. So, he said, oh, go fine. You know, here's the upload. Here's a copy of those facility cards. And never, ever posted anything in the discussion board forum, the topic, about that. So it was never, unless you actually went to Board Game Geek, which I've never had an account there. I'm not sure about you, but I've never had a count there because I really don't care about tracking my games. I don't care that much about, I'm not that much into board games themselves. I know that my boss, Joe, I know that he has, I'm sure he has a count of board game geek because he plays a lot of board games. I don't. I mainly play SFB and Federation Commander. I sometimes, when it comes to Gamers of Winter and Gamers of Summer, I will play games there. But I will never track them. I have no reason to. Why should I track them? It's not like it's not like some people, I know some people like to track their games, like to track how well they're doing and so forth, all this kind of thing, which is great for Board Game Geek. You can get the only thing I've ever used Board Game Geek for is to look for reviews on board games. That's why I got, what is it? The one cooperative game, which I actually gave to my daughter. I forget what it was called. But basically, it's like, if you've ever watched the movie Contagion, it's the whole idea of that. Where a virus spreads and so forth. I'm sure somebody, possibly in the chat room, knows exactly the game I'm talking about. And the funny part is that I found out from her is that she's played the game multiple times with her friends, and obviously they had fun because they've played it multiple times. But she says that the only way they can win is if they cheat. So it's like, wow, that must be a hard, hard game. So, in any case, you know, so that, to me, that was a fault by the game designer. That there was nothing posted saying, oh, you know, we forgot to put the facility cards were not part of this playtest material here. Please go to, you know, here's a link to the files to go grab them now. And if the reason why he didn't post it was because he was afraid of Steve Cole was going to say that it might look bad for Steve Cole. It's going to look bad anyway. It's going to look worse. Because of that was not, that's not, that was not made available. So, and I didn't know about it until later on when I ran into this issue, and then Jay said, oh, you know, that was posted like 2 weeks ago on the Board Game Geek. The files are, here's the links to the files. And it's like, you got to be kidding me. So I ran out, you know, early Sunday morning. You know, when I got to the Games Conference, fortunately down the road, you know, like 3 miles down the road, there's a Staples. And fortunately for me, because there's one thing I did not check. I did not check to see if the Staples actually had ability to print, because I'm not sure if all Staples have that. It's possible they all do, and I'm an idiot. But I didn't check. I went there and went, oh, good. You know, they actually can do what I want them to do. And I printed them out and I cut them out because I brought my, my big knife. So I was available to play. And so if anybody wanted to play, we could actually try again, which actually in a way I'm glad that we didn't because of, again, I had all those misunderstandings about the rules. And what I'm hoping to do is learn more about the game, maybe play it a couple times by myself before I try to play it again with somebody else so that we can, you know, have an actual game instead of me flubbing up big time. But even before I do that, I really want to have the questions I currently have answered by Jay. Now, the first one where Eric broke it, I don't think for initial testing, that's too critical, at least for initial play. Because of, you know, if I grab someone else, I can tell them that, you know, this is what you're going to be doing. And I can kind of sidestep the issue And that's fine. You know, for initially, I can sidestep the issue, and we can run by it really easily. Let me do this, which is I want to show you guys Merchants of the Fair. This is what it is. You know. I know some minor things like, oh, there was an error in the rule book. This I didn't like this so much, which is using a dollar sign for credit, because even though he said credits, they looked may look like dollar signs. I'm not sure how to change that. Here's my okay. So there was 11 questions and 6 comments. But yeah, I said again, what happens with enough money? And Jay said basically that would be fairly unusual. Okay, but it can happen. A player would have to sit there and not explore or settle any colonists. Yeah. It wasn't, and the thing is, he wasn't sitting there. He was actually doing things, but he just wasn't doing it in what he had expected it to be. And then Jay answered. Yeah, okay, I want to look at this real quick because I don't. Adjustment. The adjustment is based on the current price. Okay. Right. You adjust. Okay. Only the bottom at the bottom fluctuations. The current and boom, boom, boom. Right. And then. Okay. Once, okay, based on the contract cards. Now, one thing that I come to find out is I asked him about this. What are the offsets below the tension track? And he says this. It just makes no sense to me that, you know, natural, what we talk about, how the market naturally tries to return to the normal price. Basically, it's turned, this happens in addition to the card adjustments. Well, my understanding about this is that this is the market adjustment. You do it based on this. Based on it says, okay, right, the adjustment amount is based on the current price column of the resource. For example, bump, and it shows the market price. Now, one thing that I asked about this again because of he didn't really answer the question. And then that's when Nick came in and went, oh, you know, that's an the number below the tension track are added to the price paid for resource when you sell to the Klingon base. So it's like, that's not what Jay said. He says it's part of the normal adjustments. No, what it is when you sell it to the Klingons, and I'm like, let me see. Klingon border, trading. Okay, this is where it is down here. So Jay didn't even mention, oh, that's in 3.3, selling to the Klingons. So, you know, I missed this rule completely when it comes to the rules. You know, it's one of those rules I floated through, not realize what it meant. You know, the only hex on the board. That is Klingon space for the purpose of the game also contains the Klingon starbase. Now, here's one thing. It says this. No, it doesn't. According to. Right here. Klingon space is these 3 hexes. Not just the star base. It includes the 2 hexes around the star base. For the larger games. So again, Jay, what the heck? So it's another inconsistency, which, you know, obviously I'm going to need to bring up to Jay. And I will definitely do that. Sorry for not looking back into the camera. But that's one thing I'm going to have to do. You know, another one of those little things that was incorrect in his rules. That, you know, and one of those things that drives me absolutely utterly crazy. And I thank Nick for this and explaining the whole docking. Because he said, basically, this makes no sense. It says, you are still not docked after the dock action. And Nick says, right, as I understand, the docking engine is the pickup and delivery action. You dock in order to pick up and or deliver things. It is not a separate action. They said they are not a separate action. No, pick up and deliver are not separate actions. I don't know why it's called docking instead of something else, though. You don't dock at a planet unless you're assumed to be, they're assumed to be a commercial platform or something. And even then, it's goofy, you know. Overall, I think the playtest was a total, you know, I screwed up big time. Hopefully, I learned my lesson to make sure, one, to play it myself, and so that I know that all the pieces are there. Number two, reread the rules with the physical rule book and make sure I understand everything. Because one, this is playtest material, which means all the rules don't quite make sense. Or, you know, they might not make sense. Now, here's the one thing that concerns me was that, did Gene or Steve Cole read through this book, this rule book? Because if they did, they might not have understood everything about the idiosyncrasies, which I'm completely concerned because of, I would think Steve Cole would have picked up on that pretty quickly because he is a game designer. So that, you know, maybe he just read through it too quickly. But you know, there's little things that you see in the interactions of the rules and go, what the heck, man? I brought up the question of this, which was on number 9, which was, you know, the reason, figure one, okay, the hexes that are marked unused, are these hexes not used at all in the game, therefore off limits to travel to? In the playtest, these were just unresearched systems that we allow players to move through, which is what we did. I allowed them, I'm not sure if actually anyone took advantage of that. As I said, we only went through maybe 3 turns? No, wait, let me think. I started, no, 4 turns. We went through 4. We were at the very least on turn 4. I think we finished turn 4 because we had 4 players. And I started as the first player. And then it had gotten around to Eric, who was the 4th. So, and he was the first player when we ended the game. And actually, that's one thing I did do. I did take a couple pictures of the board, and I haven't posted them anywhere. I probably should post them somewhere to show what the board looked like and the pieces that I used. I didn't use the greatest pieces of the world. I basically cut things out, and that's what I did. Okay, with that, I think we will wrap it up for this evening. I'm hoping to get more responsive from Jay, maybe even come up with some playtest aids myself to help, maybe just at the very least, the cheat sheets to help me with the actions because of those were obviously very confusing. But I think this game still has very much a potential. You know, as I said, unfortunately, I did not actually wasn't able to play the game fully, so I still don't have a really good feel for how everything works. I think I understand how things work. I just don't know how those things affect each other. What is how that relationship works. Now, hopefully I can do better than I've done Splendor. Because Splendor, it's obvious to me that I lose all the time. I lose every single game I've ever played of Splendor. I've actually won one. But anytime I play against my daughter, I always lose. I'm not sure why. I just always lose Splendor. I haven't figured it out. I come up with these strategies for playing Splendor. Whether it's, I forget now. But I always have a strategy involved. Okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And it never works out. Maybe that's the problem, is that Splendor is too, the system is too dynamic to have a set strategy. That is, my guess is that's probably the problem with that. So, well, I'll have to wait and see. Maybe hopefully I'll get something a little bit more understanding this weekend. Maybe play a little bit by myself this weekend. That'd be kind of cool if I could do that. Obviously, unfortunately, well, my son's gonna be here, but my son can't play because I don't think he really can understand the game itself. I've never tried to play a game with him, so it's possible he could understand. I'm totally wrong, but I think I might try, but I think the system's a little too complicated for him to really go through. And Lord knows, I think I'd probably get just frustrated. I think that'd be a bad thing. So I'll see if I can actually go through it myself and maybe go through a couple turns after I truly understand the rules. So I think with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.